Do you want to reduce stress and get better sleep? I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman with exciting news about an effective non-drug solution. The Zen by Nuvana. It's a safe, easy way to reduce stress and anxiety, improve your mood, sleep, and focus naturally. Zen is state-of-the-art. It connects to patented earbuds and uses your music to safely and conveniently deliver electronic signals that stimulate your vagus nerve, a major communication pathway between the brain and most major organs. The Nuvana app links Zen to your mobile device using Bluetooth so you can easily control and customize your experience. Choose from a variety of signal patterns to find what works best for you. Zen is safe, easy, and effective. And for a limited time, get 20% off the exclusive Intelligent Medicine Bundle. For more information and to order, go to NuvanaLife.com/Hoffman. That's Nuvana, N-E-U-V-A-N-A. NuvanaLife.com/Hoffman. Stress less. Focus more. Sleep better. Electronically. The Zen by Nuvana. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, because it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com, and we're wending our way through the summer that never was, the summer that we will never forget, because it was pretty atypical, wasn't it?
Oof, wow.
Yeah. And so before we get to questions, radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. This somewhat discouraging item from MedPage today, NHANES, which is the National Health and Nutrition something
Examination,
Examination survey. Which is, by the way, that the NHANES pointed out that only 12% of American adults were metabolically fit. That was another conclusion of NHANES.
Wow.
It's they're almost like a perpetual discouraging news machine. You know, they keep
them and Centers for Science in the Public Interest, CSPI.
Oh,
they're very alarmist.
Forget about it. They never met a vitamin that they ever liked.
Oh my goodness.
And by the way, they're at war with Mercola. And Mercola is like doing sort of like a social media battle against CSPI, because CSPI thinks he should be frog marched in an orange jumpsuit, you know, to the nearest calaboose. And, you know, CSPI, you know, has its own skeletons in the closet with ties to big food and so on.
Yeah.
But coming back to NHANES, a third of American children regularly eat fast food, and the pandemic might just increase these numbers. It's actually about 36%. 36% of U.S. kids ate fast food on any given day during the survey period, and that was before COVID-19. Among U.S. children and adolescents aged 2 to 19, more than 11% consume more than 45% of their daily calories from fast food.
Wow. So
fast food is making big inroads in America. They also found that roughly 14% of these youth obtained 25 to 50% of their daily calories from fast food, while about 11% of their calories.
Yeah.
Yeah. They get like nearly half their calories from fast food, while about 11% obtained less than a quarter of their daily calories from it. So that's actually a minority obtained less than a quarter of their daily calories. So it's not so much how often you eat it or how much you eat, it's how big a chunk of your energy budget that it takes up.
Yeah. It's strange to think about it. You know, you figure everybody's at home. There was nowhere to go during the lockdown. There was a whole lot more time to cook.
But there's also the tendency to get deliveries.
True.
And a lot of people are getting stuff delivered. I mean, you can you can get a pizza faster than you can get a policeman.
Yeah.
You know, it's
especially
help,
here in New York.
Help, I'm being beaten up. It's like there's a little bit of a lag time on that.
Yeah.
Pizza, we'll be there in 5 minutes.
That's right. That's right. They haven't been defunded.
Defund Shakey's or, you know, right?
Domino's.
Defund Domino's.
Defund Domino's.
That's alliterative. Defund. I like it. Yeah. I think we should defund. We should start the campaign. Defund Domino's.
Defund Domino's. Defund fast food.
Defund fast food.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Hoffman, something else that's interesting. A lot of people don't know that takeout Chinese and pizza is fast food. They don't consider pizza to be fast food.
They consider it balanced nutrition.
Like your Burger King or whatever. Or they consider it to be maybe Italian food. But Chinese food
It's not an ice cream sundae.
No, exactly.
It's like bread and cheese
and tomato sauce.
But, you know, I haven't had pizza in a really long time.
Yeah.
I did have, during the pandemic, we did get a cauliflower crust.
Delicious.
I got my own tomato sauce, and I had some sausage that I put on there.
You wouldn't miss pizza.
And it was
the cauliflower pizza is beautiful.
It was very satisfying.
Yeah.
Now, so you know, again, some people say, "Well, what do you know? You're being so correct about this. What are the downsides of pizza, for example?"
Oh, besides all that trans fat in the crust?
So it's the Trojan horse for really poor quality fats
totally,
and oils.
Totally.
Now, if you go to some like Sorrento, Italy, mm-hmm. and you go to a wonderful restaurant overlooking the Mediterranean.
Yeah. Where you could order pizza by the gram.
Right.
Not a slice. It could be as small or as large
little squares.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is the quality of the ingredients may differ. Fresh tomatoes.
Yes.
Good quality olive oil.
Hopefully a lack of Roundup in the wheat crop or the flour.
And for a lot of people, wheat gluten is problematic. And they use the most refined white flour in the wheat crusts.
True.
So it's a high glycemic index product.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, coming back to this is, you know, there's an interesting article about how the Mexican state of Oaxaca, I used to call it Oaxaca.
Yeah,
It's Oaxaca.
Oaxaca
has banned the sale of candy and junk food to children, to minors. Now, you know.
Whoa.
Now that sounds like a big deal, but like, you know, if like an 11-year-old kid comes into a convenience store and says, "I'd like a pack of cigarettes," they say no. If an 11-year-old kid goes into a liquor store and says, "I'd like, you know, a bottle of vodka," no. So, you know, you can put some restrictions on what kids can obtain. Now, this doesn't stop parents from buying stuff that eventually at home they give to the kids. You don't see that. But a kid comes in and says, "I'd like a Coke." No, you can't get it in Oaxaca. The reason is there's this epidemic of obesity in Mexico.
Yeah.
It's very devastating. Their consumption of soft drinks is much higher than ours,
Yes. Yes. That's
partly
true.
Because it's better than water.
Yeah.
You know, at least it's bottled under sanitary conditions,
and
whatever's in Coca-Cola will kill any pathogen.
Right. I remember this was years ago. I was downtown the village, and I was sitting on a park bench, and I was watching, and this was an Hispanic woman. I don't know that she was Mexican or anything, but her little toddler, who was out of his stroller and kind of pushing the stroller along, stopped because he was thirsty. And mom handed him a 20-ounce Pepsi.
Woof. So
and I wanted to say something, but I didn't say anything.
There's a bit of a knowledge gap there.
Yeah. And I was like, you don't want to.
Yeah. And, you know, especially, and this is with especially the very high rate of obesity in the Hispanic population.
Yeah.
You know, there's, and they seem to, possibly because there's some Native American you know, genetic influence there's a much higher propensity just to, like, as among the Navajos, 90% of them are diabetic.
Yeah.
They're very susceptible to the introduction of, you know, high sugar westernized food.
When the trading posts happened with the flour and the sugar and the coffee, and that was that instead of their crops and their
I'm sure if they
foods,
broke it down by income levels and by ethnicity or racial breakouts, you would see you know, higher likelihood that poor people, you know, buy these products for their kids, and you know, the rich, you know, elite in Westchester are going to feed their kids, you know, organic food and you know, naturally yeah. flavored celestial seasonings right. tea or something.
So I wonder how that's working out in that part of Mexico now, since they've outlawed it for kids to buy candies and things. Wow, I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe there's just like all kinds of murders and, you know.
It's like, I want my candy. I want my soda.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. It's like they're, you know, beheading the government officials who, you know, introduce that. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you another trend. The area I live in, Long Island City, there's been a lot of new buildings going up, a lot of high-rise residential.
Yeah.
Many of the kitchens, I found out, they don't have an oven, a standard oven or a stove.
Oh.
There's a little hot plate and a microwave. Why? Because the people moving into these places to live
don't cook.
They're not cooking.
Yeah, they're taking
out
or eating.
They're ordering in. They're Ubering it, Uber Eats, and
yes,
Seamless, and nobody's cooking anymore.
Wow.
So a lot more fast food.
Whoa.
And lower quality. I can't imagine a kitchen without that. I mean, that's a reason not to sign the lease. Wow.
Well, we had this patient, both of us, just before this.
Yes.
And she has like this really fancy European stove.
Yeah.
It's like the highest end imaginable.
Right.
I can't even remember the brand name. It's something obscure.
Yeah, but it's like 16 grand.
Yeah. And but it doesn't work.
But it doesn't work.
And you can't get a repair person because I said, oh, maybe you should have gotten a GE or something. I says, you know, it's, well, this is like a beautiful aesthetic object in the kitchen. Yeah. But she's trying to get a repair person from Pennsylvania to come and look at it because they don't have very good service network in the United States.
Isn't
so she's
something?
So as a result, her diet has suffered.
Totally, yeah.
Right?
You know, a boiled egg and salad, and that's about it.
I think it's called an aga or something like that.
Yeah, I forget, but I know what she's talking about.
Kitchen
really something.
Appliance cognoscenti out there might recognize that. It's like, you know, the pinnacle of, it's like the Bentley of kitchen appliances.
Well, she just got a toaster oven that's enough to roast a chicken. I said, there you have it.
There you go.
You can use that till it's all better.
You'll give her a workaround.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So anyway, so that's not an encouraging trend. It's also, you know, in the face of our current twin pandemics of obesity, metabolic syndrome, and then, of course, COVID-19, which dovetail, it's not a good scenario for the health of Americans.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, on a brighter note, Dr. Hoffman, you've got a very nice note from a Dr. Battaglino. And he says, well, she says, because I'm not sure of the first name, whether it's male or female. I just wanted to say thank you for taking the time to research and write a very well thought out article or articles that combat the general misinformation and media hype.
That would be our newsletter.
Yeah. I wish I could have all of my patients read your newsletters, as they would that would probably mitigate a lot of anxiety.
Great. Give us the mailing list of your...
Yeah, send it on and we'll send it. As you know, the CNS, the central nervous system, is involved with the immunological system, and I believe we could help a great deal if we can calm the chaos.
Yep.
That, of course, and having a massive public health movement towards decreasing obesity and hyperglycemia.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you know what type of physician this is?
Does not say. Does it say there?
Yeah. She's an MD. She's a... there's a certification here, a FAPA. FAPA, I don't know, American Association something, Psychiatric
Maybe
Association?
A fellow?
Of the American Psychiatric Association,
Ooh.
I think. FAPA, Fellow of the American Psychiatric Association. So that's,
there
she's a psychiatrist. And she, let's plug her website, naturalmindmd.com.
Naturalmindmd. Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, maybe we'll invite
Thank
her.
Thank you for that note.
You know,
yeah.
That could be a lead into, you know, an interview. Great.
Yeah.
So any other questions?
Lee sent us an article. He said, you know, this would make a great podcast if you want to talk about it. And it's about a medicinal herb that attacks Alzheimer's in many ways.
Okay.
And last year, a research group from China carried out a review of neuroprotective effects of this medicinal herb in animal models of Alzheimer's.
And it turns out it's something that we I've heard about.
Yes.
And it's readily available.
And it's called berberine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Berberine is interesting because it does seem to work on the microbiome.
Yeah.
But it also, which might have a good effect on the brain, but it also may have a direct effect on insulin metabolism.
Right.
And so insulin metabolism has something to do with cognitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It
has consistent anti-Alzheimer's effects, improving cognition, preventing memory loss. They think it's via multiple mechanisms. And what they're finding is being an anti-inflammatory, number one. It impedes a number of cell signaling pathways linked to inflammation like TNF-alpha, NF-kappa-B. And berberine also reduces production of ROS, reactive oxygen species. So oxidative
damage. The product
damage
we like is called CM-Core.
Yes.
By Orthomolecular.
Yeah.
And it's available on FullScript, CM-Core. Mm-hmm. We generally have patients take 3 a day of those.
Right, right. And another thing they bring to light, although no human trial exists to support the use of berberine for this, it is helpful for metabolic syndrome and diabetes, and therefore, because Alzheimer's is associated with those, it's helpful in that regard.
Okay.
So it's a potent oral hypoglycemic agent, which is helpful.
Well, thanks
for
that.
In that regard. So, Lee, no, thank you. This is great information.
Yeah.
So this is actually good to know. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I generally prescribe berberine for 2 reasons. One, I prescribe it for GI problems. We have something called Candibactin BR. And the B in BR stands for berberine. That's the main ingredient. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's helpful for SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth.
Yeah. So,
diarrhea, chronic irritable bowel syndrome, responds to Candibactin BR. It also gets rid of Candida, it's antifungal.
Mm-hmm.
And the other product that contains berberine that we use is CM-Core, which we use for metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Excellent product.
And, good for lipids, too.
It's like the natural glucophage, almost.
Yes, it's actually been compared favorably to glucophage.
Wow.
In terms of its efficacy for blood sugar control in some head-to-head studies.
All right. Well, what would you say to that? Because we know that metformin is being used a lot in cancer prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Would berberine be a contender for something like that, would you think?
I guess it could be. It doesn't work exactly the same way metformin works. It's also believed that metformin works on the GI tract. It works on the microbiome. But metformin is actually based on an herb called goat's rue. It is a sort of a synthetic,
a
rueful goat, yes. A goat with metabolic syndrome is a sad thing.
It's a sad goat.
It's a sad goat, yeah. Anyway.
Okay. So we have an email here from Caroline. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I am looking for some advice for my 40-year-old son who manages a liquor store on the South Fork of Long Island. He suffered with COVID for about 3 weeks, about 2 months ago. Most of his symptoms, which were respiratory, subsided except for extreme fatigue. Could this symptom be compounded by the keto diet he frequently follows? Or is fatigue just a common result from the virus? Is there any remedy for this debilitating feeling of exhaustion even after a good night's sleep?
I wouldn't attribute it to the keto diet.
I wouldn't either. Unless he just started.
Because you gave us the tip-off right there is that he had COVID-19.
Yeah.
And there is very well documented a post-viral fatigue syndrome that is short, medium, or long duration. We don't know yet because it hasn't been around that long. We don't know whether these people are going to develop lifelong CFS or whether they'll pull out of it. But typically after a viral episode, and I've had this, you have a bad cold and, you're tired for a week. If you have a bad flu, you might be tired for a month. If you have pneumonia, you could be tired for 3 months afterwards.
Right.
There's the immunological aftermath. There's also concerning findings that some people develop myocarditis, that it attacks the heart. And there's actually a couple of athletes who've been sidelined this year because they had COVID-19 young, healthy athletes.
I heard of this.
And they had demonstrable inflammation of their heart. I don't know how they ascertained that, whether it was with imaging that they could see the heart wasn't pumping adequately, but that could be dangerous for athletes. Yeah. And certainly debilitating for the average person.
Right.
You know, it could make them very knocked out.
We're finding out more and more.
It is so, right? There's so many twists and turns with this virus, you know, that, mm-hmm. you know, the terrible thing about it is that its range of effects ranging from asymptomatic to dying.
Yeah.
And everything in between. And then there's also these, you know, problems with strokes in some patients, even relatively young patients. You know, chronic lung inflammation or fibrosis that results from that. This is a guy who needs maybe an in-depth evaluation.
Yeah.
To see, you know, is there any evidence of damage other than just that sort of icky, tired feeling you get after you in the aftermath of a viral illness?
Right. Wow. You've heard of people having mononucleosis.
Oh, yeah.
Have trouble getting out of that funk. It can take them many months.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And that's viral, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Caroline, we wish your son the best of luck going forward. Wow. Okay.
And actually, I had a... I didn't have an in-person meeting. I had a call from one of our patients. Not that many of our patients have had COVID-19.
Right.
But this one patient did, and she said she was, you know, somewhat sick. But she says this was several weeks after it was over, and she said, I haven't really regained my energy. So I really worked on her mitochondria. I gave her nicotinamide riboside, coenzyme Q10, carnitine, ribose, NT factor, you know, all these sort of energizers.
But
not sort of speedy energizers, you know, because you could drink like a gallon of coffee too, but you'd just be wired and tired.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I had a new patient recently via telephone just a few weeks ago. She had COVID back in March.
Oh, right at the beginning.
And she, you know, could hardly get out of bed, and her husband was taking care of her. But it passed like the flu would pass after about a week or two, and she didn't have any residual anything, which was great.
Oh,
that's great news. And she works in healthcare.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So when she was tested for antibodies later, she had antibodies.
Right.
So that's what happened there. And she came out the other end of that. She was contacting me for a different reason.
Okay, so that's good news because, what I dread so much, you know, in terms of my personal risk is, you know, I don't have any of these comorbidities, even though technically I am at risk because I'm a, quote, senior, I'm 67, but I don't have the accompaniments of being a senior, like depending on blood pressure medication or having diabetes or having heart disease, fortunately. But the concern I have is for, you know, the long-term sequelae, like, you know, I mean, how long would it sideline me for, you know?
All right, not to get off topic, but this a senior being somebody over age 65, isn't it time for that to change? I mean, we live longer now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe a senior should be, 76 years old or something.
You're not one of these people who says raise the age for Social Security.
I wouldn't mind. I think it makes sense economically.
I've deferred it, you know, because you get more money if you can wait.
You get more money if you wait till 70. But maybe
that's the gamble, because if you think you're gonna die soon, you just take the money and run as soon as you can.
That's it. Right. That's it. You might as well start at 62 or something.
Right.
No, I know that's what they say. To break even, you gotta lose 82.
I take your point. You know, is that the problem though is that
you don't have the health of a typical senior.
I know.
You're in good health.
You want to look at people's not chronological age. You want to look at their biological age, you know, is what they actually, what their physiologic state is. There are various ways to measure that. You can even measure it biochemically. You can do tests I did a methylation test and I found that I was, you know, 58 by that criteria. I was a little disappointed because I said 58, that's kind of old.
Not 38.
Yeah, darn. I feel sometimes like, okay. But, I was hoping for better. But it so there are ways to categorize age objectively, but also you can sort of look at the exercise capacity. You can look at the freedom from being on blood pressure medication. You can look at hemoglobin A1C.
Right.
You can look at various parameters that, you know, talk about people's their aging state, you know.
Yeah.
But the problem is, the weirdness is that people in their 70s, for example, there's a very wide berth. You know, it's like when you look at kids like in the eighth grade, you know, there's some like kids who are like 4 foot eight, and there's some kids who are like 6 foot two, and there's some kids, some boys who are shaving, and there's some boys who barely have any
peach
fuzz.
Who are just hairless.
Right. And there's some some girls, you know, who are pretty buxom, you know, and they're having their periods. Mm-hmm. And there's some girls who are flat chested. I mean, and that's and then in mid life and everything kind of like evens out. We all kind of look sort of, you know, age. And then towards the latter, there's real discrepancies emerge. You know, you 70-year-olds are extremely debilitated, broken down, sick.
Yeah.
And then others who are like, you know, I go, I do these triathlons, and then I go, you know, wow, I did pretty good, but I'm so surprised at how many 65-year-olds were in this race. I thought I was going to be the only one. It's like there were 17 of them. And then I go, yeah, but let me see, maybe I can keep going till I'm 70. It's like, no, there's like 870 to 75-year-olds. It's like, oh, and the oldest guy who did
warriors.
It. And the oldest guy who did it is like 84. You know?
That's pretty cool.
And it's like, oh, I thought I was exceptional.
That's pretty cool. Oh my gosh. So, all right. Oh, we have an email.
Well, let's pause.
Let's pause. Already?
Yeah,
oh my
you're
gosh.
Just losing track of time.
Unbelievable.
Too
much. That happens.
Having too much fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's pause and we divide our podcast in two parts. And in part two, give us a preview of what we'll be talking about.
Would you be able to recommend a good sink faucet filter?
Okay. I'll come back in a couple of days and tell you what my research reveals. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today with Layla Mutin, it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. And we'll be back to field your questions. Radio program at AOL.com, the destination for questions.